everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are heading back to Washington, D.C., one of our favorite urban RV destinations. The combination of outdoor activities and historical interest make this one of the most family-friendly vacation spots on the East Coast.
We decided to join at least a million other Americans on Black Friday who skipped a day of shopping to hashtag opt outside. Instead, we chose to enjoy a different kind of mall, our national one.
And listen to hear our first Washington, D.C. campground smackdown, where we will weigh the pros and cons of your best camping options around our nation's capital.
You might think that every RV vacation has to involve mountains and rivers without end, but we here at RVFTA love to explore our urban treasures as well. You are listening to episode 65, Opting Outside in Washington, D.C. Before we head into this week's feature topic, opting outside in Washington, D.C., we need to thank our sponsor.
Thank you, RV Trader.
Thank you so much, RV Trader. RV Trader has all the tools you need to find or sell your RV. To start your search today, visit rvtrader.com. And now for the news roundup. The big news is that the biggest event in, I think it's fair to call it the biggest event in the RV industry, is happening this week in Louisville, Kentucky. And we decided that we needed to send a correspondent to cover the event. So we searched high and low.
Well, yeah, we went through all of our staff.
We put something up on Craigslist, which got all just all kinds of weird
just
responses.
For the fun of it.
And we found someone to go.
We did, finally.
And at a bargain price.
Yeah.
So we're sending Stephanie.
Yeah, I'm going.
And really, that's exciting news. What's not exciting is that I'm going to be taking care of the kids for a few days.
They'll be fine. Fingers
crossed.
They've
been fine before.
Yes, they have.
The question is, will I be fine?
You usually suffer greatly. I come back and you're a little frazzled.
But I'm a lot frazzled. You haven't left yet, and I'm frazzled.
You plan ahead
you're
to be
like,
frazzled.
You're like, they need three things every day. They're water bottles, snacks, and lunch. And I'm like, I better write that down.
You took out a notepad. And I do. Those are the things I worry about. I worry about them leaving for school
Or no water.
That matters when you're sick.
Everyone at their school is so nice, and everyone at Wes's pre-K is so nice. They'll give him water. They'll give him snacks.
Okay, the goal is not to have kind adults jumping in to support our children.
Let's break down what this National RV Trade Show is for our listeners. Let's educate our listeners on this one a little bit. So this is not open to the public. It's not a traditional RV show in that sense that the public is coming and shopping for RVs. Mm-hmm. Instead, all of the dealers go, and the manufacturers set up all their new models, and the dealers are buying RVs and placing their orders for the year.
Oftentimes, it is a showcase, really, too. You know, there's other opportunities for dealers to make their purchases throughout
that
the
is
year.
True.
But this is really the time when both manufacturers and of the RVs and products in the industry love to
can just come celebrate, like, hey, this is our new stuff, people.
They do shows, they do presentations, they put on little like party events,
song and dance.
And
The media is allowed to come, obviously, is invited to come to cover this. And you are
I am media.
Mm-hmm. You have a media pass.
It has been a slow and steady march to – I remember the first time I got media passes for something when we were doing this, and I thought, ha-ha, media. Well, here I am.
Tricked ya.
Here I am, and I am media now.
Yeah, now you're going to be interviewing all kinds of people, and it's going to give us a lot of great content in the coming weeks. So you'll be interviewing some key players at Jayco, Winnebago, Grand Design, Truma, possibly, and some of the people from Go RVing again. Mm-hmm. So Stephanie has a lot of interviews lined up.
I do. I have a jam-packed schedule. I'm going to be really getting some great content. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, you know, the RVIA, when they're hosting this, they're excited to have the media present. And when you talk to the manufacturers, they're excited because, you know, yes, they're there to talk to their dealers. But, you know, they love the opportunity to reach the consumer also.
And let's face it. They're excited to be on our podcast.
Well, you know, they're...
Because they get to talk directly. I mean, well, think about it.
They get to talk to the consumer.
They get to talk directly to the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time, as we've been in the industry for longer and longer, we realize that in the RV industry, most of the time, the manufacturers are speaking to the dealers. And then the dealers are passing that information along to the consumer. And we see that for the manufacturers, it's really a big deal when they get the opportunity.
We're like a bridge over, you know, troubled water. It's not. We're like a bridge over untroubled water.
Untroubled waters. There's no trouble.
But Stephanie will not just be there to get some really great interviews. She's also going to be checking out all the new models. And if she comes back and she has not checked out all of the new models, she's going to get a talking to.
I know I am. I'm going to get a talking to while I'm there. I already know you're going to be texting me.
I want 4 text messages an hour.
Well, Dad, what did you say? I want pictures. You're going to like really be riding
me. I will torture her.
And I will. I will get all the deets.
So
I
could follow it on Instagram somewhat. To some degree or another, she'll be taking some pictures on Instagram as well.
Yeah. For a moment, I was like thinking I'd get all crazy and do like my first Periscope. You know, everybody's on Periscope now. And I thought, oh, I'll do a Periscope thing while I'm there. I'm like, that's just crazy. I'm not that cool.
Well, we also have approximately 0 followers
on
Periscope.
No, we don't. We have people on Periscope.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, we do. We're just not doing anything with it.
I think we have to start Snapchatting first.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't know.
So.
I think I'm going to skip the Snapchat.
I think it's like that's the evolution. You Snapchat, you Periscope, and then you're no longer
a
real human being.
I feel like, as a teacher, you feel like Snapchat is like the teenager.
That's because it is.
And you don't want to go there. Like, I don't want to go
All to my students are Snapchatting. Not during class.
Exactly.
Now, also, it's worth it for us to mention that girl camper Janine Pettit is also going to the National RV Trade Show. And Stephanie and Janine are going together to cover the event. So it's going to be like Thelma and Louise a little bit. And what's great.
Hopefully a different ending.
Different ending. But what's great here is that Janine is going to also be getting a set of interviews and covering the show, but from a different perspective, and she'll be getting different content from the show than you are.
Yeah, an example of that is one of her first interviews that she has scheduled is with Mark Polk, and that's going to be her content for next week, actually, on her episode. We're waiting to plug that interview in, because Mark Polk, do you want to explain who he is?
Well, Mark Polk is the founder, or co-founder, along with his wife, who I believe is Dawn Polk. Forgive me if I got that wrong, of RV Education 101. And he's really one of the 2 or 3 major players in the world of RV education and safety and all of that. So Janine is going to interview him very specifically about do's and don'ts for buying and restoring a vintage trailer.
Right.
What a great topic.
Exactly.
And Mark Polk does that. He restores vintage trailers, and he documented the restoration of one recently. And then he matched it to a time period correct car, and he restored the car and the trailer, which is pretty friggin' awesome if you ask me.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that interview. I'm excited to also be listening to Girl Camper. So you want to be subscribing to Girl Camper, and you want to be listening to that podcast as well in the coming weeks, because you'll be getting different content, different interviews than what Stephanie's doing.
Yeah, we're definitely always in cahoots with our production, you know, like and the content that
cahoots
we're doing.
Cahoots is exactly the right word to explain what happens around here.
Yeah, so it's actually perfect, because you know that you're not going to get the same same exact thing when you go from one of our network podcasts to another.
No, and I want to say right now, I want to pledge on air, we are not repeating content with any other podcast that we do
in our podcast network.
Yeah. Absolutely not. So you're not going to hear some interview that Stephanie did on the Girl Camper podcast or some interview that Janine did on our podcast. It's fresh content on each podcast, every episode.
Yeah, because we believe that the same person out there wants RV content on a daily basis.
And our listeners want fresh RV content.
That's nonsense.
The thing about our listeners.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of different podcasts and some of these podcast networks, and you do hear people reuse content on different podcasts. And I say, naughty.
No.
Now, the last thing in our news roundup before we head into our future topic, we wanted to thank everyone for participating in our little mini version of REI's Opt Outside. So Stephanie came up with the idea that we'd have everybody use hashtag RVFTA Opt Outside just so that we could share photos of our podcast listeners all day long on Black Friday. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much to everyone that participated. We had over 65 photos that used that hashtag. And if we didn't get to share yours, we're sorry. They were coming fast and furious.
We were trying.
If you look back at our
feed. In between our sightseeing.
We put up a ton of photos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we missed you, we're sorry. But we did get a lot of them up. And we wanted to thank you for sharing. It made the day kind of extra fun.
It was fun, yeah.
Okay. So we're going to come back in a second. And we're going to do our second podcast that we've ever done on Washington, D.C. And this is our future topic is opting outside in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back with all the skinny. And now it's time for a sponsored message from our friends at RVTrader.com.
If you've been dreaming about the perfect RV for you and your family, RV Trader has a ton of resources to help you make the right decision.
With thousands of RVs for sale across the country, finding what you want is easy.
Helpful icons on the homepage will show you the difference between motorhomes, travel trailers, toy haulers, and truck campers. And once you pick the type you're looking for, you can narrow your search by make, model, state, and even price.
Also, if you're looking to upgrade or sell your current RV, RVTrader.com can help you do that too. Millions of local buyers shop every month and will contact you directly if interested in purchasing your unit.
RV Trader has all the tools you need to find and sell your RV. To start your search today, visit RVTrader.com.
It's time for this week's feature topic, opting outside in Washington, D.C. Are you ready to talk all things D.C.?
Always. Love it.
We wanted to start by reminding everyone that we've covered Washington, D.C. before, both on the podcast and on our blog, and we'll put up links on our show notes. So episode 9 of RVFTA was called American History for Beginners,
I believe we called it.
Mm-hmm. And it was about
episode 9.
Crazy. We were so green.
We were beginners.
We were raw. We were the beginners. We were referencing our boys in the title, but we were the podcast beginners. But we did do a whole episode on Washington, D.C., so we don't want to cover the same ground again. But if you go back and listen to that one, we talked about camping in November for the first time, kind of a long talk about extending our season. We also talked about how our boys had sort of fallen in love with the presidents, right?
Yeah, last year they really took a liking to presidential history. I think particularly, as is always the case, teachers make such a huge difference in the imaginative lives of our children.
Teachers are awesome.
Plug, plug. But their teacher was very interested in the presidents, and there was a couple of displays around the classroom like about their virtues and their character. And it didn't take long for that to really have an impact on the boys.
Yeah,
Max and Theo, of course, not Wes. He wasn't really thinking about presidents yet.
And we had a lot of funny stories that we shared on that episode about the boys and their understanding and misunderstanding of the presidents. Mm-hmm. We also covered Annapolis on that podcast episode. We did not go to Annapolis this time. So if you want to learn a bit about Annapolis, which is a great spot to visit, head back to episode 9.
Yeah.
Now, also, we did two blog posts last year. We did one called American History for Beginners with the capital KOA Part 1. And then we did American History for Beginners with the capital KOA Part 2. So we broke down our trip into two sections. One was a review of the Washington, D.C. capital KOA. The other one was all of the things that we did in the city. which was really kind of a different menu of things last year.
Well, and that's the great thing about Washington, D.C., is it truly is the gift that keeps on giving. We are only a few hours outside of the city, so it is a place that we have returned to again and again and again. In fact, you know, when you grow up within striking distance of a day trip, we had to, you know, there were certain times I'm like, when did we do that? I forget. I know we did it, but was it the time we went then or then?
Was it when
you know?
We were dating? Was
yeah.
it on the eighth grade trip?
The eighth grade trip around here.
It does blend.
Around this area, many eighth grades go to D.C. overnight as a big eighth grade trip. And so, of course, we did that just like everybody
yeah.
else.
Now,
does.
Last year, we only stayed two nights. It was a mm-hmm. short trip. So we took the boys to the Lincoln Memorial and the Korean War Memorial, and then the Washington Monument was closed.
It was, and it was sold out.
Oh, it was sold out. Right. Now, you wanted to give a big tip mm-hmm. for everybody, so go ahead and do that.
I learned it last year that you can go day of when the ticket office opens for reservations at 8 a.m., and you have to reserve a time. So you can go day of, but the chances of you actually getting that...
I saw people getting turned away this year. Mm-hmm. There were people walking up like, oh, how do you get in? And the ranger was like, it's sold out for the day.
And that's what I did last year. So then I learned mm-hmm. the process, and that was awesome because this year I said, I'm taking my boys to the top of that monument.
They really wanted to go.
I've learned in our travels that it takes a couple of those wow moments to cement the experience into kids' brains. So I take that a little more seriously, I think, than I used to. And now I look for those moments that they're going to remember. We're watching the Pixar movie Inside Out a lot lately, as many people out there probably are. Core memories, right? And you go, oh my gosh, it's so true. Pixar is always
and
right
we'll,
on target.
We'll dive into that in a second because they made some core memories.
But you know what? As we were driving and we were about to park on the mall the very first day we were back in the city, we passed by the Smithsonian and the boys both referenced the butterfly exhibit immediately.
So last year and on that podcast, we covered the Museum of Natural History and a great butterfly exhibit that we went to and the Air and Space.
And we said, spend the extra money on the butterfly exhibit. It was worth it. Well, sure enough, the boys remembered that.
It was
that.
A trip highlight.
Yeah.
Right. And so this year we decided not to do the Smithsonian Museums, and partly because the weather was so phenomenal.
Yeah.
We had 70 plus degree weather.
It doesn't get any better.
For Thanksgiving Day and Black Friday. I mean, I was in a t-shirt for 2 days walking around on the mall, and the boys didn't have coats on or anything.
And Saturday was very temperate also. We were outside walking very comfortably with no sweatshirts. In fact, as we were going back to the campground on Saturday, you said, you know, Theo, when we get back to the campground, you might want to put on a sweatshirt. And he said, Dad, it's 69 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Fresh.
Dad.
He was right, though. I looked up at the little temperature thing in the car. He was reading it right
now
off
now they
of
know
the
where
car.
The temperature is in the car.
Still fresh.
That's very fresh.
You know, 3 days in a row were really nice. Thursday and Friday, the sun was out, and there were moments of genuine warmth,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was unseasonably warm, so it just made for a perfect, perfect trip.
It was.
So this year, we really focused on the mall, and since last year we only did the Lincoln and the Korean, we packed in almost everything this time.
Yeah, I noticed a shift in the boys' interest this year. Like I said, last year their teacher had really focused on the presidents. Well, this year I think that developmentally they were just in a different place, and they had Veterans Day, obviously, earlier this month, right? We celebrate Veterans Day in November, and they had really tuned in to that. So now, all of a sudden, instead of their questions all being about presidents, many of their questions were about the wars. And both of us had grandfathers that
right.
were in the war.
So Stephanie's grandfather was in the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And which branch of service?
He was just in the Army. Well, not just, but
not just
the Army.
Right. And my grandfather was a mm-hmm. merchant marine. And I've been talking more and more to my boys about my grandfather, and they're kind of fascinated by the fact right. that he was in the war and that your grandfather was in the war. And one of the pictures of my grandfather that we have in the house has ended up in their bedroom.
They put it in their bedroom
and put it on this table along with my high school sports medals.
They made a little shrine.
It was really quite adorable.
Yeah.
So you're right. They were more interested in the wars. So we
did a lot of memorials.
We did the World War II memorial, and it was really the first time I think that we spent a significant amount of time at the World War II memorial. And you really, really loved this one, didn't you?
I was totally taken by it. The last time we were there, there was a event going on there, like a parade or an honoring, because it was actually over Veterans Day weekend. So all of these veterans were there, which was great, but you couldn't really go in.
We couldn't get there.
It was really jam-packed.
That's right.
So we sort of skirted along past it. And this year, we came in from the Atlantic side. There's two giant pillars that bookend the monument. One has Atlantic written across the top, and the other has the Pacific, which is just incredibly symbolic in the fact that this was a war that spread from coast to coast, sea to sea.
The waterfalls in the middle symbolizing the seas.
And every single state is carved in stone around the memorial, representing just the sacrifice that every single state in our union made, and then all of the different countries around the world that contributed troops and participated in the war effort are carved in stone around it. And it is, to me, it has all of the grandeur and just overwhelming, like you just felt like this was such a tremendous effort.
And sacrifice, but then also, you know, and we'll talk about this, how different the Vietnam Memorial is later, but this one did have an uplifting sense of victory and of good triumphing over evil, and the waterfalls are beautiful and resplendent and victorious in a sense.
Right,
so you
walk
away, your spirit's uplifted by it.
And of course, at this point in time, it's such an important thing. You're sitting there the whole time contemplating everything that's going on in the world today and all the very difficult questions that everybody's struggling with today. So it really is, if you know, you let yourself get lost in the moment. I'm not saying I walked away with any answers, but I certainly spent a lot of time contemplating the weight of what the people in our history must have gone through in deciding whether to get involved in that war. So it was very meaningful to me. It was a tremendous experience, and it was one of those me feeling like I was welling up a little bit. And
yeah, well, we spent a lot of time there, too, now that I think about it. We kind of lingered there. Mm-hmm. Just it's that type of place where you could really hang out for a couple hours. What struck me, too, this time, since we did so many of the memorials, was sort of the way that they connect to each other, you know, and you're sitting there at the water fountains of the World War II Memorial and the Washington Monument is in the background. And there's just this connection, this pull between each of them. And it just, the mall, it does form this huge overarching story about our democracy.
Yeah,
the good, the bad, and the ugly as well.
Exactly.
It doesn't sugarcoat anything.
I don't think it whitewashes our history.
I don't think so at all.
But I think it helps us to put it into context, right? We can get so engrossed in the minute details of our own politics because we have so much information today, right? And when you step back and you look at just the scope of our nation's history, even in such a small time, we're not that old of a country, but the scope of our history and the difficult decisions that people have had to make in every generation. And it is a stunning and weighty proposition.
Talking about weighty, we did the Lincoln again. And anytime I go into Washington, D.C., I'm going in the Lincoln Memorial. It's a must for me. I do try and read the Gettysburg Address and the second inaugural each time we go in. I never seem to get through the second inaugural because, like, the boys have to go to the bathroom or something.
By then, yeah.
And we discovered that the Lincoln Memorial has really nice, clean bathrooms.
Yeah,
which
we didn't know that.
Nice restrooms
underneath.
And, you know, what impresses me about the Lincoln Memorial, you walk in and there's just that hush of silence and everyone is sort of in awe and it's so grand.
And the nice part is this just shows that there's always going to be something new for us to explore in D.C. Now our boys saw pictures of the Lincoln Memorial lit up at night.
And they want to
go
there.
And they
want to
go at night. And so already I'm thinking, oh, the next time we go, we'll plan sort of a later afternoon, evening trip in, and they can see it lit up, and that'll be great for them. So this is the type of place that really can grow with your kids, with your family, and, you know, transcend sort of the limitations.
Yeah, and I just like how we did it this time, like how we went back to some key places and added new places. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a good way to do DC, like go back and do the things that are most meaningful to you and then add some things as you go. And over the last year, I've learned a lot about how controversial the Lincoln Memorial was when it was built, which is like kind of shocking to people that there was like a kind of a big battle about whether it was appropriate or not, mm-hmm. particularly because it seems so universally accepted today to me as sort of a perfect memorial. So that also enriched the experience for me, thinking about everything I've read about it over the past year. We did do... Well, also the reflecting pool. The reflecting pool gets me every time because it's so beautiful to photograph. And, you know, you just kind of point the camera and shoot and you get a great picture of the reflecting pool, right?
Well, the walk for people, the parking along the mall right by the Lincoln Memorial, the reflecting pool leading up to the Washington Monument is free. And if you persevere, you will find a place.
And we really scored. And both times we've gone in the last 2 years, we went in November, which is not a heavily touristed time by any stretch of the imagination. We parked right along the mall and walked right up to the Lincoln Memorial. Yeah. So if you go at an off time, you can do that.
If you go on the weekend too, you are almost guaranteed a spot. As long as, you know, Congress isn't in session and it's not a busy work day.
Oh, they don't work on Saturday.
No. You really can find a spot, and it is free and it's not limited time-wise. So that's something for you to know about the ease of getting in if you want to go in your car. Now, we had timed tickets to the Washington Monument. So what we did was we got in early. We did a walk around the reflecting pool, which included the World War II Memorial, like we just said, then up along the reflecting pool to visit the Lincoln Memorial again.
Plan on walking that. Plan on walking between the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument. And if you're not with small kids, keep walking. You know, walk right to the Capitol building. It's just a beautiful walk.
And then we circled around to get to our 2 o'clock ticket time to go to the top of the Washington Monument.
And you want to talk about a wow moment for the boys, because we got up to the top, and you take an elevator to the top now.
And a ranger talks to you.
The ranger told us the stairs have been closed, I think he said, since 1979, which floored me because I didn't know that. Because people had been vandalizing the interior, which was depressing to hear.
Yeah, the stones that are along the stairway on the way up give tribute to places that donated money. The states, the organizations.
Yeah, it was like the New York Fire Department. There was all different types of organizations.
Right. They gave dedications of stones to everybody who donated money to get the Washington Monument built. Well, people were vandalizing these stones on their way up, which is like,
ruined
so
it for
sad.
The rest of us. Now, I'm not saying we would have walked, but just to know that option's there.
Right.
Now, the boys were pretty floored at the top because, I mean, first of all, it's like, hey, boys, we were just over there in the Lincoln Memorial, and it's so tiny. You know, you're so high above it, and it looks so, so far away and so small. So it really, I think, was pretty grand for them.
Oh, and the geometry of the city really lends to being able to understand the layout, because the viewing windows are facing due north, right, east, south, and west. So you can go around in a circle, and if you look north, you see the Lincoln Memorial. Then you go over to the east, and you see the White House. You go to the south, you see the
Capitol.
And then you go to the west, and you see the Jefferson
Yeah, and again, it was, like I said before, it's that the symmetry, the balance, just even like there's kind of thematical content in terms of the way these memorials and monuments are laid out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of the story, really.
Yeah.
It's the way they're shaped.
I know that they will remember that. And they'll talk about that for the upcoming year and for many years to come. So I'm really happy we made the effort. I went online over a month before we went, and we still had very limited options in terms
of
time.
So if you're going, as soon as you book your campground, book your tickets for the Washington Monument.
Exactly. Now, another couple of things that we did not do this time, but just sort of that insider information that you may not realize ahead of time. Another two things that you will not be able to do unless you plan them well in advance are White House tours and tours of the Capitol building. You can go to those buildings and see them, but you cannot go in and do the tours unless you some people say 6 months in advance. Get in touch with your congressman.
So a D.C. trip, if you want to do those things, requires some planning.
You don't have to do a tour of the Capitol building and a tour of the White House. But if you're, you know, we have listeners that probably do cross-country trips. And if D.C.,
right.
You know, if you're coming from California, if you're coming from far away, and this is like your one-stop shot at seeing D.C., you know what? Get that tour of the White House. But you have to do that ahead of time. You cannot show up because you have to be vetted. So do that ahead of time for those three things: Washington Monument, Capitol Building, and White House, all ahead of time.
No, everything we just talked about, we did in one day. So then we came back the second day on Black Friday, and we were opting outside and just really enjoying kind of taking part of that movement, really. It did feel like a movement. We got parking right by the Jefferson Monument. Yeah. Now, we know Jefferson's a controversial figure, loved by some, despised by some, loved and despised altogether. No matter where you land on that issue, go to the monument because it's part of our story. And it's in a really gorgeous setting along the water.
Yeah, so let me, I'll just explain to people. So there's the National Mall is that rectangular shape, right? Where that is, so you have the Capitol at one end, the Lincoln Monument at the other, the Washington Monument in the middle. Okay. And then there's all these memorials along the way there. Now, over to the west, you have what is called the Basin. Right now, if you've seen the cherry tree blossom pictures of DC, which I'm sure many people have, those are along, I mean, they're everywhere in DC, but those are along the Basin.
And you can walk right along the edge of the water.
Yeah. So there's another bit of public parking over by the Jefferson. Now, you could walk the whole mall and walk over to the Jefferson Memorial along the Basin, but that is quite a lot of walking there. That's miles and miles if you were to do the whole mall and then go over to the Basin also. So there's a parking lot over by the Jefferson Memorial in the Basin.
There.
Now, again, if you persevere and you do a couple loops, you'll find somebody pulling out and you can pull in.
I mean, I mean, the Jefferson is so striking though, because you're reading these gigantic quotes on the wall about liberty and some of the most beautiful words ever written about liberty and freedom and human rights. And it's by a slaveholder.
Mm-hmm.
And that contradiction is not hidden, you know, in terms of the selection of the quotes and the way that Jefferson is presented. But that's just, it's part of our history that we need to confront and look at and think about. And then what really struck me was going to the Martin Luther King Monument, which is the newest, correct, of the monuments?
Yes, I think so. And I don't think there's a newer one.
And Martin Luther King, this big kind of bold, beautiful statue of Martin Luther King, is facing the Jefferson Monument quite intentionally.
Right. Staring across the basin. That's that water. And it's right across directly at the Jefferson
what
Memorial.
What a bold design move. But again, it tells our story in this honest way. And you can't, when you're standing at the foot of the Martin Luther King Monument, you can't help but look over across the water to the Jefferson and think, my God, how far we've come, you know, and how far we need to keep going, I guess.
That's a great part of it, though, is that it also gives you hope that we will still keep going, you know, further in that direction.
And the
equality.
King Monument, I really loved. I loved any of the monuments that integrate a lot of text and a lot of quotes. So there's a lot of reading, a lot of the great quotes by Martin Luther King. And then would you describe the monument briefly, the idea behind it?
Right. So another, you know, it's funny. I always like to listen in on the tour guides that are bringing these groups through.
And they're so good.
And one of the tour guides was saying to a group, and it wasn't even at this monument, but it does apply. He said, there are two things that people who live in DC will tell you. And, you know, that's that 20% of the city always has to be under construction. And there is at least one great controversy with every memorial. Now, he was at another memorial. He was at the FDR Memorial talking about that. But the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial is no different. There was great controversy about the sculptor and, you know, it was,
there always is.
Right.
There always is.
But the design of it is this huge block of stone. And there's a cutout through these two pieces of stone. And then in front of it, almost as if that stone had jutted out, right? Slid out.
It's like the Monument of King. It's like he had like walked out of the stone.
Yeah. And then there's his body and his face looking out across the water, right? So you walk in through these giant slabs of stone. And in front of you is the stone that he's then carved out of.
And there's like that's the quote out right? of A Mountain of Despair.
A stone of hope,
right? So he's the hope stepping out of the mountain of despair. So I mean, look, this one was very striking to me, and I really enjoy it. It's one you can linger at because there's so much to read there as well. And it's kind of walkable, you know, it's kind of like something that you walk through, which then takes us to the FDR. And we're not doing these in the exact order that we walked through them.
Right, because the FDR Memorial is actually
in between. We're talking
about
them thematically. Yeah,
the FDR Memorial is in between Jefferson and Martin Luther King. So if you start at the Jefferson and park there, you'll then walk to FDR, and then you can walk to Martin Luther King Jr.
I think we both agree that the FDR is our shared favorite. It almost pains me to say that with the Lincoln Memorial. The Lincoln Memorial is more powerful.
See, we have conversations like that. I would never have said that on the podcast because I hate saying I have a favorite anything,
well,
right?
I'll tell you what I love about it, and then you can say whatever you want. It's not just a memorial to the man. It's a memorial to his time and to how he shaped his time. And it's more of a park, really, than a single – there's a statue of him at the beginning and a statue of him at the end. And in between, there are statues of Eleanor and statues of Depression-era workers – all kinds of, again, very rich in quotes. I mean, you get an education about World War II and the Depression as you walk through. And then when you come to his statue at the end, what struck me was people are going up to it and touching it and sitting in his lap. And I was having this inner debate about whether that was appropriate or not. Like, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't go up and grab his hand or sit in his lap. But a lot of people do, and apparently it's okay to do that. And in a sense, maybe it's appropriate because he was such a human president, I guess, in a sense, and so flawed a president of the people.
Of the people, I would think you would say. So that is something that is a controversy that goes on between people saying that certain memorials deserve reverence and certain memorials become more interactive. And I think that that's the design. Now, this is my take on this. If it is a war memorial, you need to observe reverence. And with our boys, I was really focused on that this time. These stones are not jungle gyms at the World War II Memorial. This is a place where people are paying respects to people they knew in their life that died in the war. But FDR, to me, that's about exactly a man of the people. Like, FDR would have shaken, I believe he would have shaken my kids' hands if he had met them,
right? I got to tell an anecdotal story about my grandfather. That to me, this is always how I'll think of FDR. My grandfather was a staunch Republican. For the last 50 years of his life, anyway. When he was a young man, he said he was a Democrat. But for the last 50 to maybe even 60 years of his life into his 80s, he was a staunch Republican. But he had – when he talked about Roosevelt, he talked about him reverently. Mm-hmm. And he said he was the president the entire time I was a child. And into my adulthood, he was like our father, you know. He was like our father, you know. Yeah. And this is – my grandfather saying this was a Republican, you know, because I know a lot of people don't like Roosevelt for his policies. But I always found that interesting with my grandfather, someone who had lived through the period – spoke about him with really pretty tremendous respect.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not – this is about our nation's capital, and it's not to get personally political on it. But he's a man who I find just fundamentally awe-inspiring to walk through and to read the things that he said to people when they were at, like, their lowest of their low and despairing economically in this country. And, I mean, it's just truly awe-inspiring. And, of course, Eleanor Roosevelt, for me as a woman, is one of the most awe-inspiring female figures in history. So she, I just have tremendous respect for her role in history also. So I love the fact that the memorial, this was a shift in memorials when the FDR Memorial was built. It was a fundamental shift in the experience as opposed to just an awe-inspiring statue.
I love how they have not just slapped up gigantic statue after gigantic statue. I mean, if they were all like the Lincoln and the Jefferson, I wouldn't be nearly as interested, frankly. I like that they're doing something very different mm-hmm. with each one to some degree. I was also so struck by the statues of the workers,
right.
of the unemployed. And again, it reminded me of a story with my grandfather who said at one point when he was growing up, every man on his block in Donellan, New Jersey was unemployed. And then at one point, as you're walking through, there's a line of men that are kind of all downtrodden looking at the ground. I thought of those men and I thought of my grandfather in this very powerful way.
Yeah. One more thing about sort of the shift, I think, in our nation's take on museums and everything. And as travelers, we see this a lot. There's one section where it has his quote about hating war, right? I have seen war. And he talks about it a little. And then he says, I have seen war and I hate war. And then what they did was they have these huge stones that are supposed to actually symbolize the rubble of a ship that was blown up, right? It comes out of the wall and there's these big stones that are like lying in the middle of the paved patio area.
Kind of in front of the larger statue.
Right, and
him.
Water runs down that area. That was the fountain was broken while we were there, but we've been there before and water runs down. It's supposed to be like the side of a bombed out ship, right? Kids are invited to climb on those stones. It is not kids being, and all over those stones, it says, I hate war. And it is very much meant to be an interactive part of that exhibit.
Yeah.
I've heard people say,
and
I've heard
tour
guides.
And to see the kids playing on it again, it gives you a sense that this memorial is, again, a triumph of good over evil, a triumph of democracy,
right.
a democracy over despotism, really moving that way. And that kind of brings me to the Vietnam Memorial, which is such a different feeling going to that one than going to the FDR, going to the Lincoln. There's no sense of triumph. There's no sense of victory. But yet to me, it's a perfectly executed memorial. It is a work of art, mm-hmm. and I hope no one takes that the wrong way. It, to me, it's mystical and it's spiritual, the way that the reflections of the living reflect onto the names of the dead, and it creates this connection between the living of and the dead that just blows me away.
Well, it also honors the individual, right? Every name is on those walls, and it's by day. It is by day that they were killed in the war. And it starts in the middle and works out to both ends. One end points to the Washington
and one
monument.
Points to the Lincoln.
One points to the Lincoln Memorial. So you know, every single name. So this is honoring the individual, right? If we can't say the same thing as we can say about World War II, that all these nations came together and collectively overcame evil, right? That it's a different story, it's a different kind of war. Well, then it honors the individual. And what a you know, interesting
Well, also, too, the fact that you descend into the memorial, it's actually mm-hmm. below the surface of the earth. And the designer, I want to say it was Maya Lin, but I probably just blew that.
Okay.
She envisioned it as a gash in the earth, mm-hmm. right? And as you kind of descend into it, the noise of the traffic disappears mm-hmm. and it becomes kind of quiet down in the middle part of it. So again, just it's majestic in a sense, but not this sense of triumph or victory that the other
right.
memorials have.
Right.
So look, that was our time in the memorials, yeah. and I just loved every second of it. You know, mm-hmm. what a range of emotions it brought out in me. Each memorial gave us an opportunity to teach our kids something, and boy, is that hard sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But worth it.
We did our best, yep. and totally worth it to try and give them a base understanding of the Vietnam War, a base understanding of Lincoln, of Jefferson.
And I want to say one other thing before we go. We did not do this time, but DC has city bikes that you can rent. And that is a fantastic way. If your kids are old enough, you can get those bikes. They're right there at the rack. You put your credit card in and you rent it for the amount of time. You can return it wherever you are.
If you have teenagers, game on.
Yeah. Well, I even think, when our boys are a little bit older, if they can navigate the people, right, that are on the sidewalks and everything. I think that this is a perfect area to explore on bikes. I would highly recommend that.
Right. Now, we're going to come back in a second, and we're going to have a campground smackdown because there are two awesome options for camping outside of DC in terms of private, family-friendly campgrounds, both good for a lot of different reasons. So we're going to like kind of let them duke it out and see which one we recommend the most. If we do recommend the one the most,
we'll say.
We'll be back. Now, as many of you know, Stephanie and I wrote a book last summer.
No. Go on.
I basically wear a t-shirt that says, I wrote a book last summer. Well, it's The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations, and there are 40 great RV destinations in the book. And now, did Washington, D.C. make the cut?
Of course it did.
You got a bunch of East Coasters right in the book.
Yeah.
And Washington, D.C. is a great RV destination. Maybe everybody out there doesn't know that. We want you to know that.
And that was one of the fun things about the book was we really did pick urban areas that we love to visit.
Yeah, I mean, we love to get close to a city if we can. And with D.C., you can get pretty darn close to the city. There are some good options close by. So the Washington, D.C. Capital KOA, 40 to 45 minutes drive from downtown D.C. Now, some of you out there might be going, oh, my God, that's not close. But when you're talking about getting close to a major city, an RV park isn't going to get you that much closer.
And if it is, it's going to be a parking lot. There are examples of that in
our
book.
Liberty Harbor in Jersey City by New York City.
In the French Quarter down in New Orleans.
But
yeah.
When you talk about the Washington, D.C. Capital KOA, you have to mention, though, it's 20 minutes from downtown Annapolis. Mm-hmm. So we love downtown Annapolis. So it puts you very close to downtown Annapolis, within striking distance of the city, of Washington, D.C.
45 minutes.
It was a solid 45. Yeah. Now, this year we stayed at Cherry Hill Park, which is a good sand park. And it's about half an hour, maybe 35 minutes. I think we were getting in about half an
Under
hour.
Under a half hour, I'll be honest with you.
I was going to say it, but I didn't. But you did.
I think we were getting in under half,
and it was not heavily trafficked because we were going in when everyone was off work. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you go at the wrong time when you drive, it could take you an eternity. So Cherry Hill Park's, let's just call it half hour, okay? That's pretty darn close to the Capitol. And it's also about half an hour from downtown Annapolis.
Right.
So if you just care about getting as close as you can get to Washington, D.C., I mean, you just have to give Cherry Hill the edge if that's your only concern.
Right. You really do. And it is very nice to be closer, especially at the end of the day when you're trying to get home. So in my mind, that is a big deal if you are looking to spend as much time in the city as
and
possible.
If you're going multiple days into the city.
Yeah. Let's talk about transportation right along with that because I think they go hand in hand. Both campgrounds offer shuttle service to downtown D.C.
And tours.
You can get that from both places, so that's a wash. Now, the difference is at Cherry Hill, the actual metro, the city metro, the bus comes to the campground. So you're not just relying on the campground shuttle service. You can take the public transportation. There's a metro stop, which is the train. Okay. So you can take the bus. It pulls right into the campground and you can take that to the train that just zooms
and,
right
in. And of course,
in.
The big benefit is then you're not worried about parking. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to emphasize again, if you go at an off time, you can park right in downtown D.C. We've done it 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And with Wes, we don't want to take the train in.
Weekends and vacations, the city empties out of the people who are there for work.
They want to get the heck out of there.
Just the tourists are easy to navigate. Even on a busy weekend, it's okay.
Yeah, but if you're going
in you are there during the week or whatever, D.C. traffic is notorious.
It's soul-crushing.
Exactly. So the metro stop, actually, there's one right at the mall. So you really can take the train right to the mall. You could get off. You could do all the places that we've talked about and easily get back to the campground. So if your goal is to not drive in the city, then I think Cherry Hill gets the win for that.
Yeah. Now, I would say, though, if you want to kind of split your trip between Annapolis and D.C., and look, you're not going to do multiple days in Annapolis to me. It's more of a day.
Naval Academy tour, shopping,
but if you're going
dinner,
for a long weekend and you're going to do both, Capital KOA works just fine. Mm-hmm. Works just fine. Now, our listeners need to know that both of these campgrounds, because they are in urban areas close to the city, they both have varying degrees of road noise. So let's kind of give you the scoop on that.
Mm-hmm. You're not tucked away on the side of a mountain somewhere in the middle of nowhere, okay? This is an urban area, and that's going to be reflected in the campground. What you want to do is try to position yourself in the best place in the campground possible if you are very sensitive.
So let's talk Cherry Hill Park first.
Okay.
So we wanted a site by the playground. Mm-hmm. So we knew there'd be some road noise there because it's closer to the road.
Right.
Now, if you're highly sensitive to noise, you would not want to be where we were.
You would want to be in the interior of the campground, more towards the camp store, right? And up, it's like up a little bit of a hill, right? And it's a little bit further away. Also know that there's going to be more road noise in the off season when the leaves are off the trees.
Right. Someone told us that they had been there when the trees were thick, which we haven't.
Yeah.
And that they didn't notice it as much. Mm-hmm. But look, if you're a sensitive sleeper or a light sleeper, just call, and when you make your reservation, say, hey, can you put me in the quietest part of the park? And I think you'd be fine if you were away from that area, but it is very heavy in that area. It's a major highway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Capitol KOA, not as bad for road noise. There's also a highway that runs alongside it.
It is right there.
It is right there, but there's like a thicker tree cover, I guess, and it dips down a little bit more.
It's a little hill, right, that goes up to that. Yeah.
So honestly, it's not as bad.
And also, there are sites, again, set off more from the road. I felt like you were a little more tucked away there at the Capitol KOA.
The Capitol KOA in front of the camp store on the side by the road, they have their pull-throughs for big rigs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right by the highway. And not so bad, really, but right by the highway. Now, behind the camp store, there's a very rustic wooded section. You're probably not going to get in there with a huge rig.
Right.
If you have a pop-up camper, a hybrid, mm-hmm. a smaller travel trailer, you could be very removed from the road noise.
Right.
So just look, you've been warned. If you care, if you're a light sleeper, if you care a lot, you need to call and say, look, put me in a good spot.
Right.
Now,
or run your AC. Like, I don't know, run a fan.
If you're running the AC, yeah, it's going to cover a lot of it. You know, we were here this time running our heat, which kicks on and off.
But that's how we travel to D.C. We go in the shoulder seasons. I don't think we've ever been to D.C. in our entire lives in the middle of summer. Because where are we in the middle of summer? We're at lakes. We're at the beach. We don't travel to destinations like that in the middle of the summer. We like spring and fall.
Yeah, so look, just don't have the expectation that you're going to camp near the city and mm-hmm. it's going to be really quiet. It's just not fair. It's mm-hmm. not a fair expectation. Now, both parks have a very different feel. Now, as I mentioned, the Capitol KOA does have more of a rustic, woodsy campground feel, where Cherry Hill Park has more of the RV resort feel. You want to talk a little bit about that at Cherry Hill versus Capitol KOA?
Absolutely. So Cherry Hill has the amenities like the fitness center. Okay. The three meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner in like a cafe. You go in, there's a little grill, right? You can order a breakfast sandwich. You can sit by a fireplace. There's a little movie theater kind of an area. There's a sauna. There's a hot tub.
Huge laundry room. That building was really nice. And that's not even the building the camp store's in. That's just the building with the restaurant, the laundry. They have a big screen TV there with like rows of seating because I think they do documentaries on the city and stuff like that. That was a beautiful building.
Yeah, it really is. And then attached to that building, there's a pool with like also a little splash groundy kind of an area.
There are two pools.
Right.
One was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, the Capitol KOA has a very small pool.
Right. See, it's a little tricky for us because, again, we don't travel to these places, to D.C. during the summer season. We love it in the shoulder seasons when the pool's aren't really out of play. But the pool at the Capitol KOA is right next to the camp store. And it's right adjacent to the parking lot. It is like your backyard pool.
It's a backyard pool. Now, the Cherry Hill had a huge pool, a second pool, and the splash ground area. So if you're going in the summer and you do think, oh, it's going to be hot, the kids are going to want to swim, you know, Cherry Hill gets an edge on that.
Yeah.
Now, Capitol KOA has all kinds of other fun stuff for the kids, though. It has a bounce pillow, the huge checker set, the outdoor chess set, outdoor ping pong, outdoor pool. So it's got a bit more it's got a lot more fun outdoor stuff for the kids, but it just loses the battle between the pools.
It has they both have nice playgrounds. Cherry Hill has a basketball court. So does the Capitol KOA.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can't lose to some degree. That's the direction I'm moving in. They both have really nice cabin options.
Right.
If you have friends, if you want to meet up with friends who don't have an RV.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Stephanie mentioned the playgrounds are about the same, I would say.
I think they are. The only thing that I feel like really separates them in terms of the aesthetic is that the Capital KOA has a more woodsy feel to it.
Absolutely.
So, and there's like a hiking path
there's
that's
walking
attached
trails. Yep.
Right to it. So you could kind of almost like trick yourself into thinking you're...
Yeah,
like,
you're going to hear cars rushing by, outdoors. But you're going to feel like you're at a campground in the woods.
Right. If that's important to you to decompress after a day in the city or something, then you are going to feel a little more like that than you are going to feel with the Cherry Hill RV park.
And price was comparable for both.
Yeah.
Now, the Capital KOA was very quiet when we were there, and there was not a lot of people driving through very quickly. Cherry Hill, there was people driving too fast, at least at the in the section we were.
It bothers me. This is a thing of mine. There's not enough signage, nor was there any encouragement to drive slowly, nor was there any warning at the gate or upon check-in to be slow and to watch children at play. And that's something that is very important to me in terms of establishing campground culture. I think it matters. Campground owners, if you say to people when you check in, there are kids playing, you should be able to slam on your brakes if a ball goes in front of you. I think it goes a long way to curbing the problem of speeding. Now, in Cherry Hill, there is a ring road sort of around, and it's paved, and I feel like people treat it like it is a regular
like a road,
road.
So again, you might, if you're making reservations at Cherry Hill, say, hey, don't put me on that main loop road around, because there definitely are quieter sections. You could be off of that loop have that issue.
But it wouldn't be paved, and there's a conference center there. So I feel like there's day use people that come in and out and that do drive just like they're driving on a residential road.
Yeah.
But we all know that when kids are at play in a campground, they play like it's their backyard.
Maybe in the summer when there was kids everywhere, that wouldn't be happening. But you know what? There were a lot of kids at the campground.
Oh, absolutely.
For Thanksgiving.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the camp store at Cherry Hill was huge. Mm-hmm. It has a pretty much like a full service RV area with all the RV supplies you would need. And then just also like a second room that has like a mini grocery. They had the newspaper there, magazines, just some nice touches.
Yeah.
The Capital KOA had a nice store, but a smaller store.
Yeah.
And I would say the Cherry Hill Park, there's more shopping around. Not shopping, but there's restaurants right around.
There's a ShopRite right up the road. There's an IHOP, you know.
There's
it
a
is...
Starbucks right up the road. Now, yeah. For some people, that matters. If you want to go get your morning coffee, if you don't want to make it. Now, the Capital KOA, a bit
you had
more,
to drive a few miles up
yeah.
the road to get to. There was all of that, the Starbucks, the Wegmans, and everything up a ways a little bit. But you had to drive a good 10 minutes maybe
right.
up the road.
It's a campground smackdown. We've got to pick winners or else we're just cheesy and we shouldn't have called it a campground smackdown.
All right.
So what would you say?
For me, I want to be close to the city when we go because we go in and out. Like we spend a short amount of time there. So distance is everything unless we're going to Annapolis. Next time we go in, we probably want to do the Naval Academy tour with the boys. So we haven't done that with them yet. If we want to visit Annapolis, we're staying at the Capital KOA. If we're just going to do the city, we're staying at Cherry Hill.
You stole my thunder, baby. So I would say if you're going for just a weekend or a stretch weekend, and you want to do Annapolis and DC, I would go to the Capital KOA because I like the more rustic feel. I like that it's a bit more woodsy. If you really are going to be there for a longer period of time and it's all about getting into DC and that's really what you care about, I think it's an obvious choice to stay at Cherry
yeah.
Hill. And just know that you want to ask for a site that's not right by the road
mm-hmm.
and it's not on that main, more highly trafficked loop road.
Yep.
So did we pick a winner?
No.
We didn't. Because we're so nuanced. We're
it
subtle.
Depends. It depends.
It does. It depends. And that's life. And that is, you know, when deciding upon what the right campground is, it does depend, right?
It depends on you.
It does. So
right.
We will be back in a second to wrap up the show. When you talk about Washington, D.C., there's just so much to talk about, and we didn't even get everything in that we wanted to talk about. So name one thing that we left out that you wanted to mention.
The Botanic Gardens. The United States Botanic Gardens is awesome. It's another free thing on the mall, part of the Smithsonian system, and they have the Pollination Station train display right now at Christmas time. Phenomenal, awe-inspiring. beautiful.
We had half an hour wait to get in. It was worth it.
Worth every minute.
And then they also have in a different room a recreation of the mall, the scale model of the mall that was so cool, except the Lincoln Memorial was facing the wrong way.
Get over it. It's beautiful.
I forgot to even talk about Pete's Coffee. If there are any Pete's Coffee lovers out there, drop me a line. I'm kind of a little bit of a Pete-nick.
You are.
A major step better than Starbucks for me. And Pete's Coffee has stores all over D.C., all over the downtown, and they have this huge, awesome one in Silver Spring right outside of the city, and we ate lunch at that Chinese restaurant, and it was delicious. Can you tell that we love D.C.?
We'll be back, and when we do, we'll tell you all about it.
About a year from now, we'll be doing a podcast on D.C. again. We'll do all different stuff. Ford's Theater, what do you want to do that we haven't done?
Shakespeare and Library.
Yeah, I mean, I did the Ford's Theater a long time ago, but we haven't done it with the boys.
And we're going to tour the White House soon.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be back next year with another podcast from Washington, D.C.
And before that, we'll be back again. We'll be back again. Tune in next week for the other stuff.
We're all in, baby.
All right. Bye.